call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, and the time is currently 10:05 a.m. on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. Present today, we have Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, Representative Tilton, Representative Thompson,
Guttenberg.
Representative Pruitt,
Guttenberg.
Representative Guttenberg, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, if folks could mute their cell phones. This morning we have two bills, HB 197, which is Community Seed Libraries, and HB 41, which is Joint Prime Sponsorship. And we are going to hold HB 299, which had been scheduled. That was the extension of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. We can hold that till Friday's meeting. And so the first bill up today is HB 197, Community Seed Libraries, by Representative Johnson. We last heard this bill on February 19th, 2018, and we did public testimony at that time. There were no amendments. However, the committee does have a CS before them, and if it is the will of the committee, I would like to move HB 197 from House Finance today. So at this time, I'd like to have Representative Johnson and her aide, Liz Rexford, come to the table, reintroduce the bill, and walk us through the changes in version M within the CS. And with that, if you could both put yourselves on the record and proceed. And also, we have with us Co-Chair Seaton. And so please proceed.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee. My name is Representative Jennifer Johnston, and I'm here to present the House Bill 197, the Community Seed Libraries. Working with the CS has been a collaborative process, which made a good bill even better. Since introducing this bill, I've heard a lot of encouragement for its passage from our agricultural and local gardening communities. This bill will help to legitimize a growing movement in our state to further improve food security and self-sufficiency. Thanks again for hearing this bill. My staff, Elizabeth Rexford, can talk you through the details.
For the record, my name is Elizabeth Rexford, staff to Representative Johnston. The newest version of HB 197 reduces labeling and testing regulations for the exchange of small batches of commercial seeds. The bill will permit the Alaskan gardening and farming communities the opportunity to continue expanding seed sharing without breaking the law. We currently have far onerous seed labeling requirements in Alaska. The way the statute is currently written, any seed that is used at any capacity within the state has to go through, or should go through, the commercial process of extensive testing, germinating percentages, and labeling. The new requirements comparatively would be limited. The new labeling guidelines would require only a few sections: the seed's common name and name and address of the seed library. If treated with a toxic substance, the labeling would require the statement "treated seed, not for consumption." As for signage in the library, the seed library would have to display the statement not authorized for commercial use and not classified, graded, or inspected by the state of Alaska. The new fee requirements for labeling is far less than the two pages of requirements we currently do have. As stated previously, Alaska has been experiencing a severe food security challenge. By passage of this bill, our community seed libraries will be able to confidently exist and grow into the future. Please join us in supporting HB 197. Rob Carter, whom is the state's plant materials center manager, is online as our expert. Thank you for taking the time to hear this bill again.
Thank you, Ms. Rexford. I'd also like to note that we were joined earlier by Representative Ortiz. And so with that, questions regarding the CS, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on the 100 pounds, the way I'm reading it is that they just can't do 100 pounds, more than 100 pounds at one time, but that is not like a yearly limit. Is that correct?
Yes. In the prior version, there was a 12-month limitation per person, and we did take that out of the bill.
Follow-up? So now it's just based on a particular transaction.
Through the chair, that is right.
Representative Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at summary of changes version A to M sheet, and the first one says page 1, line 9, remove the insertion of commercial and non-commercial. And is that just a misstatement in the changes, or I'm misunderstanding?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that was a mistake on the summary of changes.
Okay, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an important bill, I think, for encouraging gardens and early farmers, and I appreciate the effort and the work together with Representative Johnson and her staff. What we wanted to do and make sure, which is what the original bill was trying to do, was seed libraries, basically, there is no need to regulate them at that level, but they still are subject to the, if there are issues with noxious weeds and other things. But I want to go back to Representative Wilson's comment. The 100 pounds, and I haven't been able to get an answer, and maybe you have a better answer, Representative Johnson, or your staff. The 100 pounds could be, and I don't know, 100 pounds to me seems a lot, although I'm not a farmer. I am a big gardener, but I'm not a farmer. 100 pounds is a lot, and it's to each person. Is this focusing on one specific seed, grass seed, or alfalfa, or hay, or is 100 pounds within what we're talking about, the scope of what a seed library would be? That's
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we did consider a few different levels and numbers in terms of grams and pounds. Originally, I believe it was proposed at 100 grams, which was far too small of a level for the department to oversee and to regulate seed libraries at. It was moved up to 1 pound, which was also seemed as too low of a level. And so the department did need to come up with a number so that the public and the agricultural communities would be protected against invasive species and other noxious plants. So how the 100-pound level was calculated, it was suggested by calculating the general broadcasting plant recommendation for the non-commercial planting of a cover crop used to improve one's soil health or to produce a crop such as oats or barley for 1 acre of feed or forage. In the future, there may be a couple or a few instances where where it would reach above that 100-pound limitation, and in that instance, then they would follow the currently existing regulations in terms of testing and needing to send in samples.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. For a cover crop in the 1 acre, I mean, that's bordering on going to commercial, but I don't do that stuff, so I'm not really aware of where that break point is. Is the department online? I'm trying to figure out what are we cutting off, or where is the understanding of where an agricultural would go from a seed library, basically people doing low level of gardening or even farming, to commercial? If Mr. Carter's on, that would be great.
I see Mr. Carter. We also, looks like we've got Ed King with DNR also here in the audience. Would you like to? Carter, okay. Mr. Carter, if you're there, if you could put yourself on the record, and we can restate the question if you need that.
Record, this is Rob Carter with the Division of Agriculture in Palmer. Could you please restate the question, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Carter. 100 pounds seems excessive for what I perceive as a seed library. Local gardeners, people, you know, doing garden patches and vegetable patches and flowers. So 100 pounds per person could be a lot more than that if there's a family, and bringing in us a bag of 100 pounds. So what at 100 pounds are we including that 50 pounds or 25 pounds couldn't have done?
The record, this is Rob Carter. Through the chair, Representative, the 100 pounds is a general broadcast planting rate for a crop such as oats or barley or wheat that an individual may utilize for a forage crop for their goats, for their single or double beef, or maybe even another livestock animal that they have there. We believe that there needs to be a limitation to one point, again, to provide that protection and to try to make sure that we can control the spread of an invasive or non-native species of concern within the state of Alaska. And we want to make sure that the limitations are high enough that an individual that's living a subsistence lifestyle that may be trying to raise some livestock or produce a forage or feed or improve their soil health in a remote region in Alaska of 1 acre or more or right around that area. And we believe that 100 pounds fits that need, that meets that need, that still falls below a threshold of what a commercial planter or producer would be required to have.
If I may, Mr. Chair, one more question, follow-up. So, Mr. Carter, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I hadn't thought about a local gardener or seed library or somebody trying to support a small effort on goats or a dairy or anything else. But what is so 100 pounds of barley or grass seed or something? What is that? What is the coverage of that? The question is from commercial. So this is only between non-commercial entities, right? So it's a non-commercial farmer to a non-commercial, another non-commercial person. It's not from a commercial seed producer to a into the seed library. Would that be right?
For the record, this is Rob Carter. Through the chair, Representative, that would be correct. This would be an individual, for example, in Bethel or north of the range, let's say, along the Yukon River, that was required to purchase some seed to save on shipping. They brought in a couple 100 pounds. They had some carryover from the previous year of a barley crop that they were using to raise some livestock for their subsistence lifestyle within their community. And to reduce that shipping, they did bring in a couple 100 pounds or a super sack of that material, and then giving them the legal right to be able to share that seed non-commercially with members of their community, of their nonprofit, of their church, so that they in turn can then reap the benefits of, you know, a cover crop or the forage that's produced off a reasonable 1 acre.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any further questions of the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I'm not sure whether this is for the sponsor or for Mr. Carter. In the summary of changes, we're talking about a limitation of 100 pounds for a single transfer to follow the labeling requirements. As I see on page 4 of the bill, it's talking about for each person who receives seed. So I'm trying to figure out which this is. I mean, can someone just buy four 100-pound sacks or on four different days and avoid the 100-pound limitation? Or is this for that individual could only buy 100 pounds in a year?
Ms. Rexford?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, as it reads, it's per transaction. So it the way that it currently reads right now, it does seem like that would be.
And can you,
Representative Seaton?
Can you point out that, because I'm looking at page 4 and I'm not seeing it. Person may not give seed or exchange seed with another person under 110 or 120 in an amount that for each person who receives a seed exceeds 100 pounds. So I want to figure out which this is. Is it per transaction or per person? Or both? I mean, I don't know where the transaction language is. Maybe Mr. Carter could, if he's familiar with the.
Mr. Carter, would you like to weigh in?
For the record, this is Rob Carter, through the chair, representative. I see this as the person receiving the seed, is my interpretation of this language. So an individual, again, in the case of a cereal grain where it is more efficient to buy in bulk, let's say that a local farmer rancher on the peninsula, you know, miles from town out East End Road, makes a purchase of a super sack or 18 to 2,000 pounds of a seed to be used raise a forage on their property. Let's say that they only utilize 1,000 pounds of that super sack and then want to disseminate that non-commercially amongst their community, again, or through a nonprofit or through a seed library. That individual then would only be limited to give out to each individual person receiving that seed 100 pounds of that existing seed lot.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to ask the sponsor if they see a transaction limitation any differently than that in the bill.
We've kicked around limiting it over a year's period. I mean, we've changed to exchange by person, and I think this is probably the best that we can come out with without limiting too much, but with providing some kind of protection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wanting to get on the record so that we all understand that it's per person. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'd also like to recognize we were joined by Representative Gren earlier, and so you have the changes that have been incorporated into the CS before you. If there are no further questions on the CS, if we could maybe adopt the CS, I'd like to adopt. Mr. Representative Seaton, entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the committee substitute for HB 197 version 3rd. BLS 0493/M be adopted as the House Finance Committee as its working draft.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 197 version M is now before the committee as its working draft. And is there anything else from the sponsor that you'd like to add? Seeing nothing, are there any further questions of the committee or for Mr. Carter, Representative Guerra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just speaking for myself, I don't see any questions on this bill that I need to hold it for, but that's okay. Myself.
Okay. Vice Chair Guerra, then, if there are no further questions, if you'd like to walk us through the fiscal note.
Thanks, Chair. House Bill 197 has a zero fiscal note from the Department of Natural Resources. The appropriation is agriculture, allocation, North Latitude Plant Material Center, OMB Component 2204. This bill costs no money.
Okay. Are there any questions on the fiscal note? Seeing no questions, I would also entertain a motion to move the bill. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 197 version 30LS0493/M from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 197 version 30-LS0493/M with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note has passed. With that, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the report. It's back on record at
long bill.
10:25. And
short time.
Our final bill up today, this morning, is HB 41, which is joint prime sponsorship of bills by Representative Guerra. And here to present the bill is Representative Guerra and his aide, Mr.
Tristan Walsh.
He is here, Tristan Walsh.
Yeah.
And so if you could both put yourselves on the record, just a reminder, since we have two male voices, if you could just state your name prior to speaking for the record. And with that, if you could begin with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative Les Guerra, District 20.
Tristan Walsh, aide to Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Over the years, this legislature has had a practice that allows people to become joint prime sponsors of legislation. Though I never understood it, the old rule, which we don't have anymore, only let you do it the first 5 days of session, and then you couldn't do it again. But some of the best relationships I've ever built in the building have been with members across the aisle, working as joint sponsors on legislation. I'd like to return that practice with the little change that you can do at any time during the year. I think having people work across party lines is good. I think, number one, it builds relationships. Number two, it builds trust. And I think it's what the public expects of us. I think it's better for a group of people, especially a group of people across party lines, though it doesn't have to be, to stand together on an issue. I think the public wants to see that, rather than just one person saying, this is my bill. And I know I've done this in the past with the former mayor of Fairbanks. I've done it with the former co-chair of finance from Haines and a number of other people, and I know many of you have too. I'll just state the obvious also. As a former minority member and now a majority member, I'll say what you're not really supposed to say, which is minority bills tend to move slower. And I think, frankly, co-sponsorship across party lines helps solve that problem too. So the bill is simple. It follows the current uniform rules. So to change the uniform rules, you need a two-thirds vote. I don't want to have to do that. So it works within the current uniform rules. And the way the bill would work is a group of people could get together. I don't care whether it's four. I know Representative Wilson thinks, well, maybe it should be more, and I don't really care. That's fine to me. They get together. They all have to agree to be joint co-prime sponsors. In practice, you'll have one lead person or two lead people. You can always remove your name from a bill when it's in the House where you belong to. So for us in the House, for those in the other body, the Senate, and then when it comes back to your body, then you can remove your name if some violence has been done to the bill that you don't like. We asked Doug Gardner at Legislative Legal if he can remember a case where somebody has objected to somebody moving their name off a bill. As far as he can recall and as far as I can recall, that's never happened. I suppose it's a possibility, and I guess if to anticipate the question, what happens if somebody objects to you removing your name from a bill? You'll know that going into it, and when you sign on as a joint co-prime sponsor, I guess you can take the small risk that whether you can decide whether or not to take that small risk. But in my view, were that ever to happen, I think I would feel comfortable telling my constituents that the bill got changed, it's got my name on it, I don't support it anymore, and my first chance I would try and take my name off of it. But that's just not happened in the history of this legislature. So I think really the positives of the bill is it gets people to work together, especially gets newer, younger legislators to build relationships when they might be suspicious of each other. I support the bill strongly. I did not think that I would, for various reasons, I didn't think I'd have the support when I pre-filed this last year. And it sort of grated on me that I didn't move this bill because I think it's a small thing that does a good thing for the legislative process. So thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the committee, I'm willing to take any questions.
Real good. Any questions? I don't see any questions. Well, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have one from experience when I was joint co-prime. And that was when everyone owns the bill equally. And so if there are very many co-prime sponsors and you are in committee and someone wants to make an amendment, Do you feel that the person presenting the bill as one of six co-primes can just say, yes, I agree to that amendment, or do they need to check with the actual owners of the bill, which is different than a co-sponsorship? And so does that necessitate some understanding that all co-primes are equally have equal possession and ownership of that bill?
Thank you, Chair Seaton. I think the co-primes have to come up with an understanding in the beginning as to how it's going to work. The way it's worked with me when I've been the lead co-prime, people have given me the discretion to make those calls, but then I would bring them back to the other co-primes and say, this is what happened, so they could decide whether or not they were okay with it. And but you could also, as a group of people, decide we're going to agree in advance whether or not we're going to accept any amendments or have to say in front of the committee, I can't tell you whether the other co-prime sponsors accept it. Though in the end, really, when you're before a committee, it's the committee's purview to decide whether or not to put an amendment into the bill usually. But it's never been a problem whether I've been the second or third co-prime or the first co-prime. I've never had that problem. It's always been the way we've done it. We've trusted the lead prime sponsor, and then that lead prime sponsor has come to us, or I've gone to the other lead prime sponsors and said, this is what happened. Are you okay with it? Should we try and reverse it? Do you want to take your name off of it? It's never, but in the end, it's never been a problem in the ones I've been involved in. And I think you have to just have an understanding as co-primes as to how you're going to approach that issue when you start out.
Follow up?
I think it's just really good to put any pitfalls on the record while the committee's discussing it before we take action on it. And so the other, what is the process? Taking your name off as a co-sponsor is very easy. You can submit a green slip and say, remove me, or you can tell the clerks. As one of the prime authors of the bill or ownership of the bill, is the process the same, or do you have to stand up on the floor and ask to change sponsorship, which is normally what has to be done for changing the sponsor of the bill and not a co-sponsor?
It's a good question, Mr. Chair. If I felt like at this late stage of the game we could change the uniform rules with a two-thirds vote, I would just let somebody do it automatically. But the rules right now and in this bill are you stand up, you ask for unanimous consent to take your name off. In the history of the legislature, as far as I know, and as far as Doug Gardner, who may be online, knows, and he's got a memo inside the packet, nobody can ever recall of a situation where somebody objected or required a vote. But you would go into it knowing that that might be a possibility before you decided to sign on as a co-prime sponsor. It's a very outside possibility in my view, but I suppose if you ran into a bunch of people who are having a bad day, that could happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. We've got a question from Representative Thompson and then Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm trying to remember back when I first became a legislator, it seemed like there was a yellow sheet also that you could sign on as a co-prime sponsor, but the first prime sponsor had to sign on also that it was okay for you to become a prime. And then it seemed like that there was a deadline a week or two into the legislature where it was the deadline to sign on as a co-prime on a bill. Is that still going to be what we're going to be doing this time around with this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson. So as was the practice before, all prime sponsors have to agree with each other to the other prime sponsors. And that's never been a problem. I don't recall that ever being a problem. The former rule was you could only do it during the first 5 days of the first year of a two-year session. I never understood why that limitation existed. Personally, I think you should be able to do it all year. There should be all-year cooperation. Somebody comes up with an idea in February, and somebody else was going to file the same bill. I think they could say, "Let's do this together." I think working together should be an all-year thing, not just a first 5 days of the year thing.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garrett, we've had casual conversations of this in the past, and I guess we have a different history of dealing with these things, right? I would much rather have somebody help me with a bill, whether they were a prime or a co-prime, than somebody just wanting to put their name on something so it's on their name. So, I mean, there's different dynamics every time you turn around. I mean, this is insider baseball. I mean, I don't object to the bill, but I think the experience of, you know, pushing things, and some people want their name on it, or maybe the bill sponsor or three of the bill sponsors would say, we want a specific person's name on it to support the bill, who just does it because he's asked, as compared with the next person who really wants to be on it and push it and just becomes a co-sponsor, doesn't get to be on. The dynamics inside all of the working groups are, you know, you get a group of people, and who will actually work on it, who will defend it, who will shop it around, who will make it stronger. I don't necessarily think you have to be on the co-prime or the prime list to do that. I mean, the previous bill, we worked with the sponsor a lot, you know, and I just became a co-sponsor today because it was important, but my name didn't have to be on it. It was like we have talked about, it's important to get things done instead of getting your name on it. But I know it's important for some people, and the dynamics for everybody is different in the building, right? The perceptions are, you know, different from for all of us and how we relate to them. But I would rather have somebody that would wanted to work on the bill and it was vested in it and didn't need their name on it, and then, you know, trying to, you can bring a group of people together who don't have to have their name on it just as easily as you can and be effective. So not that I'm objecting to it, but just it's an observation that the dynamics are just very different by person, by bill, by party. You know, one of the things we learn in this building right away is on some issues there are no party lines, there are no regional lines, and that works really well. So, and at times I imagine that the co-primes is the best thing. So the dynamics in the building are wild swings.
Great. Do we have any other questions? Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as he was, Representative Guttenberg was talking, I was wondering, so how far along in the process would a co-prime be able to be added at any, I mean, not just when it's filed, but any time along the process?
Through the chair, it's upon introduction of the bill. So you would agree before the introduction. I understand Representative Guttenberg's point, and frankly, when I do it, I like to have people, when I've done it, I'd like to have people who are going to work on the bill, right? Or blatantly, if there's somebody who's got great relationships with somebody I don't have great relationships with, and they can talk to the person, that's a good piece of legislation, they can get those folks to let their guard down and say, oh, I'm going to look, the merits of the bill are, I'm glad this person explained the merits of the bill to me. So you could do it any way you want. I tend to side with what Representative Guttenberg mentioned, which I'd rather have co-prime sponsors who are going to work on the bill and help it along. And four people can do more work than one person. Three people can do more work than one person. But I also understand all of our views, which is we don't have to have our name on every bill. We just vote. But it's hard to deny that it is a nice thing to end up through 2 years of work in a legislative session and have a bill that you passed that you can take some pride in with your constituents. It may sound prideful, but I think it's we put a lot of work into this job. A lot of us work long hours. I look at the people around this table, and these are people who work long hours. I think you should come out of the session with something that you believe in that you have some ownership of.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, obviously, this is all insider baseball. This is all kind of us and our own little discussion and kind of our positioning. But the question I have is actually related to the second section of the bill. You indicate there's a piece that describes what happens for a bill to be withdrawn, and so the question I have is it says that it's within a manner prescribed in the uniform rules for which that it can be withdrawn, and it has to have agreement of all joint prime sponsors. How do you perceive that working? Would they just stand up like they would now and withdraw and say, with the approval of the other co-prime members, and as long as one of those members doesn't object, then therefore it would be removed? Do we need to require – would there be some sort of requirement that they go around and get the signatures of the others that they can remove it? Maybe the person's gone that day and they actually do have a problem. I mean, you know, sometimes the disagreements come amongst a bill. How would you perceive that taking place in actual application?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, again, it's you stand up on the floor, you ask for unanimous consent. If nobody objects, your name gets removed. That last requirement of the agreement of all joint sponsors, I don't know if Doug Gardner is on the line yet. If he's on the line, I don't love that last sentence that you need all joint prime sponsors, because as Representative Pruitt said, what if somebody's not there that day that you remove your name from it? And if that part can be taken out without requiring a uniform rules change, I'm fine with it too. I'd need to know from Doug Gardner whether that's a uniform rules change. I don't want a bill that's going to require a two-thirds vote on both sides.
Mr. Gardner, if you're online, if you could put yourself on the record, and if you need the question restated, we can do that.
Through the chair, Representative Doug Gardner, Legislative Legal Services Director. Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the issue that during the conversation, I know you've spoken about the prior prime sponsorship for pre-filed bills that ended, I believe, in the 29th legislature, in the first session. The concern that we had at that time, and I've written a number of memos to folks over the years, is that when we had co-prime sponsorships, one of the concerns was who had the authority to withdraw the bill, and it was a concern that we had. In response to that concern, in preparing this bill draft for Representative Guerra, that dilemma is resolved by the fact that you would need all joint primes to agree. In other words, we're going to treat everybody the same if they decided to sponsor the bill, so that we don't have to try and pick and choose. Right now, in the current situation, if a bill is, you all know that the sponsor of the bill is the person that has the authority to withdraw that bill, and so this is really a logical extension, I think, of that rule. And so this bill proposes to treat the joint sponsors the same, so that we don't have to do a who's on first in terms of authority to withdraw the bill. Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I misread that last sentence. The last sentence does make sense. So you've got two things that can happen. One is you want to remove your name. To remove your name, you just stand up on the House floor, or you ask to remove your name. Historically, nobody's ever objected. Your name gets removed. The other is you want to remove the bill. Well, you've got four prime sponsors who like the bill, and all of a sudden you don't like the bill. Well, you can take your name off of it, but the other three might want to continue to push it. So the last sentence has to do with withdrawing the bill. And I think the remaining sponsors, if they like the bill, they should be able to push it. I don't want to take their right away to do that. And if you want to remove your name, you remove your name. So that's a different issue. And actually, I do agree with the way the bill is written now that Mr. Gardner explained to me what these are two different issues that we're talking about.
Yeah, can I follow up, Mr.
Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you both. And Mr. Gardner, if you could ask, because I do think that there needs to be approval of all the joint primes. I think the language there is correct. I'm just trying to figure, Doug, if how this would work logistically in terms of, let's say you only have two co-primes and there is a disagreement on the particular bill and one does want to remove the bill, and maybe it's on a day that the other member happens to be out of the excused for some reason, and he says, you know, I stand up to remove the bill. You know, what? How is the confirmation that there really is agreement amongst all of the co-primes that this particular bill it needs to be removed? How would that? I mean, how do you see the logistics of that working? Would they come back the next day and that person says, "Hey, I didn't really want this removed," and then would we keep it in place? Just kind of your thoughts on how, because this, you're right. I mean, if I recall, we had problems with this. That's why we kind of got rid of the co-prime deal a couple years ago.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I would expect, you know, a lot of what happens, and we've got the statute, and then there's the floor practice, and there's the precedent the body develops. I would liken this a little bit, and I think Representative Guerra may have alluded to this earlier, I would liken this to the situation where you're perhaps waiving a bill from committee, a chair stands up and says, I'm going to waive, House Bill 1234 from the Finance Committee. We already heard the companion, and I have the agreement of all my members. I believe the folks are honorable on the floor, and if they do have that agreement, they'll state that. And so if there's going to be, in your hypothetical, Representative Pruitt, if there are two members, they're both co-primes, and one stands up and says, and I've talked to Legislator X, and she or he, we both agree the bill should be withdrawn. I think that that's probably the same type of practice and not really much different. If there's a dispute about it, then the member that wants the bill withdrawn has the remedy under this statute of simply taking their name off of it and distancing themselves from it or whatever's going on. So I hope that answers your question. That's my best answer right now.
Thank you. One more follow-up.
Follow-up?
Yeah. Doug, so I can't remember. Is the waiving out of committee that sheet, is that just practice or is that uniform rule?
The waiving from committee is we know that under the uniform rules that the speaker has to provide one or the president has to provide one committee of referral. The practice of waiving from committee is allows the speaker to satisfy that in your house, that rule. And I think it's a practice issue where the efficiency at the end of session, typically a bill get waived if its companion's been heard or whatever reason people want to move it to the floor. So the waiving from committee is, I think I would say it's rule-based in it, but it's mostly a practice that has evolved in the House and the Senate to move bills.
Yeah, thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Hey, Representative Wilson.
So I want to propose a conceptual amendment. Is it okay to do it now? Sure. So I have two, but the first conceptual amendment, number one, would be to delete, sadly enough, Section 1, lines 3 through 5. I want to make sure that our independents are counted. I think by putting bipartisan, it makes it actually more partisan, not less. So I would like to propose to delete lines 3 through 5.
Okay, and that's conceptual amendment number 1. Is there any objection to conceptual amendment number 1?
Would you repeat it, please?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what it would be is to delete lines 3 through 5, which is Section 1, on the short title, this act may be known as the Bipartisan Cooperation Act.
Get rid of that.
Just delete, yes.
Okay. Seeing no objection, conceptual amendment number 1 has been adopted. And Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And conceptual amendment number 2 would be on line 13, starting with up to 4 joint prime sponsors. So it would just to delete those words. I think if more want to sign on and it's a really great bill, why we would limit it to 4 people, it'll be all up to them to get along.
Is there any discussion on conceptual amendment number 2, Representative Guerra?
Thanks, Chair. So I'll agree to this, and I understand Representative Wilson's point, but just as the committee votes on this one, just think, is 8, does that become unwieldy? But that's really, I think, Representative Wilson's point is that group of people can decide among themselves. They can decide how big or small they want that group to be, so I've got no problem with the amendment.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion on conceptual amendment number 2? Seeing none, is there any objection to the conceptual amendment? I don't see any, so conceptual amendment number 2 has been adopted. And with that, are there any further, Representative Seaton?
First question,
questions for?
For Doug Gardner. A question for Doug Gardner. Is he still online?
Mr. Gardner, you're still there?
I am still online, Representative Foster.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at line 15 where it says all joint prime sponsors must agree to allow additional joint prime sponsors. There was a statement that joint primes would only be at the introduction of a bill. It seems to me that this language allows joint primes to be added through the process, not just on introduction. And if that's, can you clarify that for me as to whether this language starting on line 15 means that additional joint primes can be added with the agreement of the other joint primes?
Representative Seaton, is that a question for me, Doug Gardner, Legal Services?
Yes, it is. I'm trying to understand the reading of that in relationship to a statement that joint primes were at only allowed at the introduction of a bill, and it seems to me that line 15, page 1, through halfway on page 2, line 1, indicates that joint co-primes could be added throughout the process with the agreement of all the current co-primes.
If that's a question for me, Representative Seaton, I think the sponsor should be asked about the sponsor's intent with that, but I guess my assessment of it is that, remember, AS 2408-060, which is being amended by the addition of this subsection, is the introduction of bills. And our prior experience, if we're to some extent looking back at what we've done before with prime sponsorship, that was in a pre-file situation, a narrower situation, but that was introduction. Once the bill was introduced, people could become co-sponsors. And so my read of this, and I certainly I don't want to get crosswise with the sponsor here, but I think this is about introduction of bills. This isn't about, you know, 2 weeks down the road if the bill is being perceived in a way that somebody wants to put their name on it. I think that's where the co-sponsorship comes in, but I think the sponsor should say what the sponsor's intent is on this.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I just want to also get Legal's writing on this as to what the actual writing interpretation is, as well as the sponsors, but I would like the sponsors.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We closely considered this issue to make sure that it was only upon introduction of the bill, and maybe if I could walk Mr. Gardner through the two sentences and the rest of the committee. There's only two sections of the bill that remain. but in the first section, it says a group of members and online may introduce a bill or resolution. This is for the introduction. And to be clear, we added that same language in Section 3, which says a bill may be introduced by a group of members. It's clearly just the introduction of the bill. It's not adding people on later on. By its words, it's just the introduction of the bill. I don't know if Mr. Gardner saw both of those sections, but we were clear when we drafted the bill to limit it to the introduction of the bill in both sections explicitly.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just trying to understand if it's on introduction of the bill, then I'm trying to I just want to make sure it's clear and that we get it on the record that this is what it is, because after, I mean, of course you're introducing the bill, so there is no co-prime because the bill hasn't been introduced. So a group of legislators can get together and decide but the addition where it says all joint prime sponsors must agree to allow additional joint prime sponsors indicates that additional joint primes can be added, and I just want it very clear as what the legal interpretation of those of that language is, that it does not allow additional co-primes to be added, because no one's a co-prime until after it's introduced, is my reading of the bill. Doesn't exist until it's introduced. So anyway, would you just, Mr. Gardner, discuss the format, the formatting of that? Is there anything we would need to change to make it very clear that joint co-primes is only at the introduction of a bill, and that they can't be added later with the allowance of the co-primes?
Mr. Chairman, let me just go ahead and make it very clear and put my opinion on the record. My opinion is that this bill addresses introduction of bills only. It addresses a group of people that are working together to be primes on a bill. I don't think it needs further clarification. As I said, if after introduction others want to be associated with the bill, that's the time to become a co-sponsor, not a prime. Primes aren't going to be added by this office under this statute after the bill has been introduced. One of the issues that this bill resolves, going back to the prior co-prime issue, Representative Seaton, was how does Ledge Legal deal with additional folks whose names going on to the bill? And you know, we don't want to get into the politics of it. And so basically what this statute says is if you want to be a co-prime with others, others all agree. It takes us out of that process. We don't have to get involved in calling three offices and then four offices. It's up to the primes to sort that out. But I want to be very clear that my view is that this is an introduction statute. It's not an add-on later statute. And based on the way that the statute's drafted, Ledge Legal won't add co-primes after introduction and draft the bill that way, because I think this statute's fairly clear. Does that help you, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Doug. I just wanted to make sure that it was very clear on the record what this meant, because the words could have been interpreted differently unless we had that as legislative intent. And including the legal intent behind the reading of those words. So I do appreciate the explanation there.
Okay, thank you. We've got a question from Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Doug, I just wanted to, on what Representative Seaton is saying, so the reason we have all joint prime sponsors must agree to allow additional joint prime sponsors, we're still just talking about during the introduction portion of it. So if two people got together before somebody could reach out to number three or number four, those people would all have to agree. So it's all still just talking about at the introduction, not later on.
Right. Talking, through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, I agree with your statement. It's talking about during the introduction process, not after the bill is introduced. And that's where the blue ribbon in this whole thing is. And once you cut across that line on introduction, then this statute's no longer involved, at least from the standpoint of putting names on. Those are co-sponsors after that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, we will go into public testimony now open on HB 41. And if anybody's watching and they'd like to submit public testimony, they can email us at housefinance@akleg.gov. Again, housefinance@akleg.gov. And I don't see anybody in the room here who would like to testify. Is there anybody online who would like to testify? Hearing none, public testimony for HB 41 will be closed. However, again, if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do that. So with that, if it is the will of the committee, and it appears that it may be, I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 4130LS0189/A as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 41, which is 30-LS0189/A, has been adopted with individual recommendations and the two conceptual amendments and the attached fiscal note. And so with that, if folks could just stay to sign the report. Our next meeting is scheduled for this afternoon, Tuesday, April 3rd at 1:30 p.m., and at that meeting we will be taking up four bills, HB 284, which is a capital budget, HB 282, which is the capital budget contingent on tax, HB 129, which is fish and game offenses, licenses, and penalties, and HB 240, which is pharmacy benefits managers. And so if there is nothing else to come for the committee, we will be adjourned at 11:01 a.m. Thanks.